Welcome to the Food Freedom Habit Podcast, where you can find freedom from food crazies using nothing but your own brain. With me, Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach. Would you like permanent food and body peace without tracking one trigger or calorie? Whether you're dealing with overeating, binge eating, bulimia, food obsession, body hate, or the endless diet cycle? We do all this without delving into past trauma, starting yet another food plan, or monitoring every meal. Live a free life aligned with your health and values. If you're ready for something real, you're in the right place. All episodes are 100% free, so please subscribe to and review our podcast. Hello, this is Lydia Wente, the Lifestyle Coach, and so happy that you guys are joining us today for my interview with Amy Johnson. I'm so excited to chat with her. So she is the author of this amazing book, The Little Book of Big Change. We actually got connected because if you've seen the Katherine Hansen interview, she was the author of Brain Over Binge. She absolutely changed my life. And in her new book, her recovery guide, Amy is a contributing author. And I read what she had written, and it was just so impactful and so interesting. And we got connected. I read her new book, and I asked her if she would be on the show. And I'm very happy that she agreed to that. So really excited to just explore some really interesting topics with her. She has a great perspective and very much a woman after my own heart. Like, we're both like in this same cause together. So should be a lot of fun. So a little bit about Amy. Amy Johnson, Dr. Amy Johnson, is a master life coach. She works with clients worldwide through coaching programs, workshops, and retreats. She's the author of a bunch of great books, including Being Human, Essays on Thoughtmares, Bouncing Back, Your True Nature, and again, The Little Book of Big Change, The No Willpower Approach to Breaking Any Habit. So she's been regularly featured on The Steve Harvey Show and Oprah.com, as well as The Wall Street Journal and Self Magazine. And she devotes a large portion of her coaching practice to helping people end unwanted habits. Link to her website will be below. It's dramyjohnson.com, and so excited to chat with her today. So without further ado, here is Dr. Amy Johnson. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
Well, I'm so glad we're getting to chat. And for those who don't know you yet, you have a really interesting and pertinent story that I would love for you to share. So Amy, do you just want to share a little bit about like your story as a binge eater as well, and kind of how you came across these same principles that, you know, I talk about on my channel?
Sure. So I have been coaching and in the kind of self-help psychology field for quite a while, since like 2004. And it was around that time, maybe around 2006, really, when my own binge eating habit really kind of got out of control. And it was, the way I would describe it, is out of control for about 7 or 8 years. You know, it would wax and wane, and it would get better and worse, but it was definitely a driving issue in my life that whole time. And, you know, it's a horrible thing, as we've talked about. It's a really thing to live with. And it was an especially hard thing for me, feeling like such a hypocrite and such a fraud, because I knew I had so much spiritual understanding, psychological understanding to share with people. And I was sharing it regularly, and I was helping people. But then I had this huge habit, you know, this what felt like this big kind of plague thing that kind of followed me around, you know, and it was like, why can't I just kick this one thing? Like, this is so hard. And so I tried everything. And the more I tried, the worse it got, unfortunately. And that's not to say that some things didn't help, you know. I mean, I did different therapies, I did different kind of, I mean, everything from like, you know, hypnosis to acupuncture to therapy to you name it, and I tried it. Diet, you know, different kind of food, nutritional kind of fixes, all kinds of stuff. And sometimes they would help, you know, there would be things that would be helpful, but nothing really got to the core. Nothing helped permanently and just just gave me that feeling of freedom. I always felt like the monster was right behind me, you know, and it was going to catch up. Like maybe I could outrun it, but this habit was going to catch up and get me again at some point. Until I want to say like 2011, when I found Catherine's book, Brain Over Binge. And halfway through reading it, I just knew I was done. I just had a series of insights, you know, not even finishing the book, honestly, where I was like, this just makes so much sense. And I just see this habit in a new way. And because I had spent so many years before that studying spirituality and mindfulness and psychology, I think everything fit together. It was the brain piece to the bigger spiritual understanding that I had, that spiritual understanding being that we are healthy, like we are resourceful, we're resilient, and that experience flows through us and we don't have to take it so seriously. Well, I got that on some level, but to hear the way that Catherine told her story and described kind of the really simple brain science behind it, it just, to me, it just felt like this merging of spiritual stuff and science stuff that was like, okay, I don't, you know, I can't even explain it because there are really no words to describe it, but I was done. And so maybe a year or so after that, I started sharing these ideas with my own clients and teaching classes on them and stuff. And it just blew my mind, and I'm sure you've seen a similar thing, Lydia, like just how many people struggle with binge eating specifically, but just how everybody has something at some point in their life, at least, that feels like it has a hold on them like that, you know? So I wasn't even advertising or saying that I was helping people with binge eating, and I would have clients that had this issue or had very similar issues with food and body image and stuff. So it was really natural how it just became something we started talking about. And so again, that was in maybe 2012-ish. And for the past, you know, three, almost 4 years, it's just been, you know, a huge part of my practice. And I just love sharing this and freeing people and helping people get to that place where they don't feel like that monster is chasing them anymore. You know, where we can just take a deep breath and say, oh, okay, I think this habit, or I know this habit is done. It's behind me. And it's a great feeling.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story. I remember that similar feeling of like the missing piece. It's like you have all of these like little bits of truth. And then, it, you know, Catherine's book for me too was kind of that missing piece. Yeah. Tell me a little bit, like, I'm interested, Amy, when you were like, before you had found the principles that kind of ended binging for you, did you always think of it as a habit, or did you have periods where did you identify as like a food addict, or like, you know, someone like, you know, once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic, kind of that mentality of like, this is who I am?
Yeah, definitely. Especially early on, you know, I mean, and again, early on for me was like maybe 2006 or so. Like I didn't know, I don't know. I didn't know any of this stuff. You know, I would just Google my symptoms and see, oh my gosh, okay, well, first of all, this is a disorder, which in some ways felt like it meant something. You know, it's a clinical thing, and it's in a book, and there are other people that have this problem. And so that definitely gave it a feeling of it being very personal and being about me and maybe something I would never be able to get over. You know, I had other issues in my past. I had really bad anxiety for a couple years when I was in graduate school. Like, I mean, 30 plus panic attacks a day, afraid to leave my apartment. So I had gone through things like that and had therapists tell me, you know, well, this is just kind of the hand you're dealt. You can learn to cope with these things. But they flat out told me, you know, like, you know, you're an anxious person. You always have been, you always will be. When things, you know, get rough in life, you're probably going to be anxious. And so I kind of applied that to this as well. And I think there are people out there that still kind of talk about it in that way, you know? So I definitely thought, wow, like this is serious. It's a disorder. I mean, I went to OA meetings. Like I said, I tried everything. So there was really nothing, you know, that I didn't try. So yeah, there was a lot of that. And you know, I'd love to talk more about that. I mean, just, I think that's just such a key part of our current understanding in psychology that I really believe we're moving away from, but maybe not fast enough, you know, and there are probably lots of listeners and people out there thinking, no, this isn't just a habit. This isn't something I can just walk away from. Like this is in my brain, or it's like my mom had this, or, you know, all of those things that make it look much more stable than it is.
Yeah. When did that identity shift come to pass? Like, you know, from, okay, maybe this is just who I am, to thinking like, you know, maybe this is a habit or something that you could leave behind you or fully recover from. Did that come with Catherine's book, or was that kind of an evolution before that?
No, I think it was actually after. So part of it came with my own recovery. I kind of saw like, whoa, I read half a book and I'm done. This is crazy. So, you know, that started to show me something about it. But really, it was kind of after the fact, in the couple years after that, when I started looking more at the spiritual side of things. So I kind of, you know, she outlines the brain side of it brilliantly and very simply. I mean, we're not talking about, if you anyone hasn't read the book, we're not talking about like this hard to read neuroscience book. It's very simple. So I got that part, but then I started just looking at like, if we as human beings, if we're spiritual beings having this very mental human experience, I mean, experience kind of flows through us. We are feeling our thinking in every moment of our life. We're feeling what's on our mind in that moment. And that's true whether you have habits or not. You know, when you're having an urge to do whatever your habit is or your addiction is, you're feeling thought and it's moving. As much as we can feel stuck in something, as much as it can feel, and it's just natural for humans to take what we're experiencing and identify with it. We don't even realize we're doing that. We just do, you know, it just happens in an instant. We feel stuff, emotions, thoughts, whatever it is. And we instantly, our minds want to kind of own it and make it about us. So it's easy to see how we get caught up in this, you know, how it starts to look like I'm a food addict, or I've binged, you know, 7 times this week, and that shows on this chart that I have this problem, and we take it all on. But as I really just started to get a feel for the fact that nothing is stable. Like, there's very little in life that's stable. Nothing in the world of form is stable. It's always moving. So even our thoughts, our emotions, that stuff, you know, human stuff that's kind of manifesting through us and then moving on. We've never been stuck in anything permanently. Now, we can replay it. And what happens is, when you think that you're a food addict, for example, you start to feel kind of hungry after you've just eaten what looks like a sufficient meal. And you start telling yourself, oh crap, that's because I'm a food addict. Look, I'm going to binge again, you know, and it happens in an instant. So our beliefs create our experience. Totally.
Yeah. So, you start gathering evidence for the things that you already think, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So when you think that these issues, right, are stable and about you, and they're very personal and they're very meaningful and they're hard to get rid of, that's going to be your experience to some extent. But when you start to see, like I somehow just luckily did, you know, after I got over this issue, wow, everything's like that. We get hit with jealousy. We get hit with anger. We get hit with joy, all kinds of things. We get to experience them because it's awesome to be human, and that's what we experience. And then they go away, and then we get more, and then they go away, and then they get more, you know, on and on for your entire life. And that's what kind of helped me see, wow, it really doesn't make sense to look at someone's behaviors in a single moment from a single state of mind and put a label on it and say that's them. Even those behaviors are very habitual. Even when they're happening over and over, they're kind of stuck. We all with habits are stuck in a level of consciousness in a sense. You know, we're stuck seeing in a certain way. And when you can't see around it, you can't see around it. But as soon as you do see around it, which is what an insight is, it can fall away in an instant.
Yeah. And I love your language around that. Like, I think insight is a word that captures that so well. Like you said, like that point for you halfway through the book where you just, there's just kind of a knowing, like, you know, beyond the intellectual, but like that knowing. So tell us a little bit, describe for our viewers a little bit about what you mean by an insight and how one might achieve this elusive insight.
Yeah.
It's elusive. So, yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, insight's such a fascinating thing, and sometimes I think it gets kind of a bad rap. Like, it's not a bad rap, but we get a lot of misunderstanding about it. So insight can mean, and sometimes it means, like, suddenly you feel this shift and you just see life in a different way, and it's like that kind of lightning bolt aha moment. And, you know, we do experience those, usually not too often and not too many of them in your lifetime, but they certainly happen. It's really cool when that happens. I think anything that helps us to just see something that we didn't see before, or see like nothing changes around you, but just because something awakens within you, you just see life, whatever you're looking at, in a somewhat different way. I mean, that's an insight. So it is so commonplace, you know, so that's the fear, is I'm always hesitant to talk about it in a way that makes it sound so big, because then I have, you know, clients and people are like, well, I haven't had that big life-changing insight. Well, maybe not in the way that, you know, books talk about them, but you've had lots of little things. I mean, like my favorite example of this is thinking about, you know, us adults, if we think about how we were in, say, middle school. Now, you talk to anyone in their 20s or 30s or 40s and say, oh, you know, what would you do if you went back to middle school? Would you be like you were when you were 13 and 14 in middle school? And we can all say, heck no. Like, I just would do that whole, I wouldn't care what people think as much. I'd do that whole experience differently. I mean, nothing really happened except we grew up and we're the same people, but just incrementally and so naturally, we came to see life in a different way. And it's the same life, we're the same people, but we see it totally different because we've had so many insights along the way. So insights, I think, are very commonplace, and we all have them all the time, but we, you know, we can expect them to feel a certain way. But it really is just like I like to describe it as a sea change. Like suddenly you just see something that you didn't see a minute ago.
Yeah.
And how to have them. That's a great question. Like kind of, you know, especially when it comes
about to that. Yeah. Like if somebody is wanting an insight, and you know, feels like they intellectually know it, but haven't had that insight yet. Like what would you recommend for people, or what can help them to move toward that place?
Yeah. I think the biggest thing is not trying too hard, like just being open to seeing it and getting that it's something that it's our birthright. I mean, like I said, we all have insights all the time, but it's so human to go at it and say, I'm going to get myself an insight today. I'm going to make this habit go away, you know? And like I definitely found in my story, a lot of people found the harder we try, the further away we tend to get, because we get right in our heads. Like, okay, what should I do? You know, what should I believe? What should I be thinking? How should I be doing this? And if you're in your head with all those shoulds, you're not really open to an insight. So it's almost like the more, it's so counterintuitive for people, but it's almost like the more relaxed you can get, the less attachment you have to having an insight, the more you're just open and you're in a place where you say, I don't know what's what. Like that's why surrender sometimes is so wonderful for people, because they're like, well, everything I've tried hasn't worked. So I don't know. I have no clue. And that's usually when you're going to get an insight, just because you aren't trying to fit what you're hearing into a certain box. You're just open.
Which, like you said, is so not intuitive. You know, it's like the minute you tell yourself, I'm never going to have ice cream again, that's what you want more than anything. You know, it's like a lot of the letting go side of it, or that, you know, I'm okay, or like having those underlying beliefs of like, you know what, like I'm well, and I'm just going to find the right direction by letting go. It's kind of a scary thing. It's kind of a leap of faith, but I love your perspective on that, and just that it can't be forced. And I guess maybe just to create an environment of letting go, like how would one begin to sort of let go, to allow and not force? I guess maybe I'm asking, what are the things that you do to not force an insight, which may again not be helpful, but does that make sense?
It does. I mean, you know, being curious is a great, like being, you know, if you're just curious, like look at children, young children, they have insights. Again, we all do, but they have insights, especially left and right. I mean, they're constantly just seeing, oh, okay, well that makes sense now. And I didn't see it that way before, because they don't have anything on it. They're not out in life thinking, I need to start learning a bunch of stuff or I'm going to be stuck here forever. They're in life thinking, okay, well, people just grow up. It's not up to me. It's just going to happen. And so they get to just approach things softly and just with curiosity. And that's the perfect breeding ground. So again, when we can get out of our heads trying to manage it and fix ourselves and make it happen and see that we are all wired for insight. Like you, it is your birthright. Literally we are all wired for it. We are open and ready. And it's not that we have to do anything to get more ready. It's more that we just want to stay out of the way. So the less we can do, you know, the more we can just be curious and casual. Like I always say, if people are watching a video like this, just watch it like you're watching a TV show. you know, don't take notes and like try to analyze it all, you know, just take stuff in casually and it will speak to a part of you that's not your intellectual mind, you know, and it will because you're wired for that.
Yeah. Just be curious and let it happen. Mm-hmm. I know that a really helpful question for me when I was, you know, kind of starting into like my real recovery was like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Like, I have crazy thoughts right now. Isn't that interesting? As opposed to I have crazy thoughts. That means I'm crazy and I'm an addict and I have a problem. Like, just like, oh, isn't that interesting? Just like that casual vibe. I love that. Yeah. And I really would love to chat with you more about that idea of thought. I love the things that you talk about it. Just kind of like, you know, when you boil things down, I'm not a big believer. Like I tend to steer away from if I ever hear, and this is the cure for everything. Like that raises red flags. But when it comes to something like this, I mean, Amy, we're talking about thoughts and I've really come to a belief that pretty much everything stems from thoughts. So if you can navigate those, I really think you can change anything in your life. And again, like I'm still learning, I don't know. But tell me more thoughts about thoughts that you have, like just kind of how they're a foundation and just some of your insight about like our process of thought.
Yeah. Great question. I agree. I mean, it's so foundational. I think it's just that all human experience starts with thought. And it's not like we aren't talking about, you know, a thought in your head, like I want to go get some ice cream necessarily, like that's a thought, but it's deeper than that. You know, it's the way that we come to experience life is through thought. If we aren't made aware of something, if there's not a thought in our mind or an emotion or a feeling in our body that then is brought to our awareness, then what are we? You know, we're not experiencing anything. So literally, I mean, it is like the cornerstone of human experience. And it is how we experience every single thing we ever experience is through thought. And what I think is really fascinating, I mean, first is just to see that because it's really easy. It doesn't look that way. It doesn't look like we're experiencing an inner movie and then projecting it out to the world. It looks like, because we're very advanced brains that want to make this a very rich experience for us, it looks like we're experiencing things out there. Our habits hurting us, you know, that dirty look that girl gave us earlier, that's hurting us. Like it's somehow coming in and that's affecting us. And it's huge to flip that and see. It's not that there aren't things out in the world that we would like to change if we could. It's that in every single moment, we're experiencing our own thinking. And that's the only thing we can directly experience ever. So it really, and there's no blame or judgment or manipulation even in that. It's just a way, it's just something that we want to understand how it works. You know what I mean? So like, it's very natural for people to take that and say, okay, well then what should I be thinking? Like, tell me what to think more, or especially in terms of habits, you know, well, what should I be thinking when I have this urge? Like, what should I tell myself? It's not about manipulating it and changing it. It's about understanding how it works. Because when we can just be an observer of something that we accurately understand, you know, when we see, okay, my own thought comes up, arises within me, I experience that, and then it goes away, and then new thought comes up, and then it goes away, and then new thought comes up, then you're just in that place where you're just letting life kind of come through you, and you get to experience it all, but you aren't tied to it, you know, and that's really what that tie is, what's us into trouble, because we have like an urge to binge and we get tied to and we get caught up and we act on it, you know? So being in that place where it kind of washes over us. So I think thought, I mean, like you said, it's really accurate. Like thought is the basis for all of it. And I I'm with you. I don't want to like put out a website that says I have the cure to everything in the world, but understanding thought is, yeah. I mean, and I've seen it, you know, I've seen it, because when we understand how our mind works and we start to not take all of that so seriously, it's like you just kind of raise a level and like you do see things differently, and you know, relationships change and habits fall away, and it does happen.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about, speaking of thought, was it when we chatted before, I just really wanted to mention this, because like a superstition of thought, is that what you called it?
Yeah, it's kind of like the inside out, outside in thing. I think that's what we were talking about in terms of, it looks like we're feeling life happening to us. It's just the way our perceptual system is designed. Our eyes point out there. So we see things and we never told any differently. It looks like there's a cause and effect if something happens out there and we feel it. And I think that is a superstition. It's like any superstition, like you have to wear your lucky socks, for your football team to win or whatever. It can look true and it can feel true. And we can probably find cases where it really looks true. I wore my lucky socks and they won, see? But it is a misunderstanding. It is a superstition. Like I said, it's that flip. It's that we're having this kind of inner movie going on. We're experiencing our inner world. And when we don't understand that, it just gets kind of confused and looks like it's coming from out there. And again, why that's bad is because we, if it looks like it's out there, we start to feel like victims. So it's like, I have this disorder. It runs in my family. I have this habit. This happened to me, therefore I'm just, this is just who I am. And that's, it's not true because we're always in flux and change is possible for anyone at any time.
And I think that's such a mind-blowing thought of that things will always change, thoughts will always go away. Because like in that moment, especially, if when you've created a habit and have an urge to binge or whatever it is, because it applies to so many things, like just the idea that that thought and that feeling will go away, I think is so powerful. But in the moment, like waiting, even though you have evidence to say that other thoughts have gone away, like what would you suggest for that, like in between, right? Like you feel the urge to do whatever your habit is. You intellectually know that thoughts will change. Like for you, what did you do in the in between? Or like what would you suggest for people? Like, does that make sense? That gap of before, like while you're still feeling it.
I think it's I think, see, I think the understanding, like when we have the insight and we have a deeper understanding about how it works, I think that does the work for us. So, like when I read Brain Over Binge, this is one of the things I think is so brilliant about Brain Over Binge is that it gives another explanation, from a different angle of what's happening. So you can feel that, and rather than being instantly sucked into it, oh, it's a horrible feeling, I have to go act on this, and being all caught up in that. It gave people a new way of seeing that, which is something like, okay, this is my lower brain. This isn't me. I know what this is. This is my lower brain is caught in this rut, basically, and it screams at me every once in a while to go binge eat, and I don't have to listen to it. So it just that understanding, again, that wasn't anything we had to say to ourselves necessarily, but having that understanding or that new framework for it, it makes that space bigger. Like we talked about this, like you feel it happening, but you're not in it so much. It's almost like you're in the bleachers, and you're still watching it, and it's not pain-free necessarily. You can definitely get a little wrapped up in it. But that's how I experienced it, at least. It's like there was just a little more space, and then a little more space, and it was just the understanding that provided that space. It wasn't anything that you necessarily had to do or think or tell yourself in that moment. Was
Yeah.
that, I'm curious, was that kind of your experience as well?
Yeah, I think so. Like I did have a disconnect though, because I had this intellectual understanding of like the thought would pass. And especially times where like I feel more susceptible, like I have the understanding now, but especially early on, I found that, and I would love to chat with you about this too, just that mindfulness, like I would feel the urge. I would intellectually know that the urge would pass. But I remember I just started creating a trigger for myself of when I felt it, I would just breathe. Like, okay, I'm gonna take a deep cleansing breath. And it's like it gave me that little bit of space where I could feel more like I was operating from my higher brain. Like I would, be able to have a little more power in what I was doing. And the understanding that I had the power all along, and to feel that more instead of just intellectually know it. So I feel like that was a really helpful thing. But I do feel like that space gets farther and farther. Like you have more and more kind of understanding. It's really kind of a practice in building faith that, okay, yeah, it's going to be okay and it's going to pass. So.
And what I love about what you just said, like, because I think it's a great place to look a little bit, is because, like, So for you, and as you had that space, but it wasn't huge and super easy yet, it was just maybe like a tiny sliver of space, it occurred to you, like your wisdom said, let me breathe. And, you know, it wasn't a technique. It wasn't written somewhere. It wasn't something you had to, it wasn't necessarily like a, you know, a tool that you had to bring in. It was something that occurred to you. And I think that's brilliant. That worked for you and it occurred to you. Like you didn't have to do anything to make it happen. And then you saw that it worked and then it occurred to you more and more. And so you could use that. And I think that's so huge to see, because what happens, I think, in a lot of very, very well-meaning, you know, how-to books is someone experiences like what you experience, like their own wisdom truly shows them, you know, just in the moment they have a hunch and they follow it and it's helpful. But then we look in the wrong place because we don't understand thought and we don't understand how this works really. So we look at the behavior. We're so focused on the behavior. So you might look, now you could go, you wouldn't do this, but someone might write a book and say, here's how you stop binge eating. As soon as you have an urge, you breathe. Well, that's not going to work for a lot of people because it's not about the behavior. Do you see what I mean? Like it was a way that your wisdom showed you to navigate it and it was very helpful for you. And it's going to help for some people. And I think that's why most self-help does work for some people, but not all people.
Only the people that it works for, right?
Right, exactly. Because we're kind of looking at the behavior. So I just think it's wonderful for everyone listening, you know, that you will have hunches. Like people have said all kinds of things like, oh, I go for a walk or I do this or I do that. Those aren't going to work across the board, but if you stumble on something that's good for you, that's perfect.
Yeah. I think just tools to kind of be allowing of the insight, right? Like that breath gave me a moment to be aware of the insight. I know a lot of times, like saying the thoughts out loud, I find just kind of gives a tool or something that worked for me. And I've seen work for people of like, you know, oh, like you're thinking of it from a new perspective. You give yourself that room for insight. So yeah. And just, and I love that idea of like, we are well, like there's an underlying, like, you know, we can follow our specific, like, oh, I have this feeling to do this in the moment and that worked and okay, I'll use it again.
Right. So that's huge to know that we're resourceful in that way, that we're not out, you know, we're not just kind of out here all on our own having to use our brains to figure things out, because if we were, we'd be in big trouble, because when you're in the middle of an urge, your brain is pretty hijacked. You know, I mean, you're just, it's not going to be your brightest moment. So, but the lucky thing is you don't have to use your brain. It's like we just have this wisdom, this common sense is like the best way to think about it. I think it's just common sense that we don't have to think about and work everything out. It just kind of comes through us. And yeah, to know that's there takes a huge load off, because we can just do our best to relax and listen and be guided. And it's really going to be helpful.
Yeah. And sometimes I know that, you know, we're both coaches and we help, you know, people to come to their own understandings. Like, I think it's so much more powerful rather than telling someone something, you know, just to help them to have their own insights. I think it's kind of a skill that you develop to trust those insights or to recognize those. And just those things that help. So yeah. I love that. Tell us a little bit about you've mentioned a couple times, like mindfulness or kind of, you know, your spiritual journey. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts on that and kind of how that works in with, you know, any sort of habit that you're changing.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is what we just said, you know, kind of knowing that we are well, we are healthy, we are well by nature. You know, that for me, that was a big thing to see several years ago when I first saw that, because I kind of, again, we're just in the psychology tradition of things, and it didn't look that way. It's like, no, you can have this disorder or that disorder, and then that becomes who you are. And I just think that's wrong. And I think it's becoming obvious across the globe. I sure hope it is anyway, that it is wrong. And we're kind of thinking about mental health rather than mental illness quite as much, you know? So kind of seeing that mental health is there by default for all people, and that our moment to moment experience, no matter what it is one of thought. So we're all healthy. We're all habit free by nature. That never goes away, but we feel what's on our mind in every given moment. And so when your thinking is really out of whack, or you're just not, you know, you're feeling really horrible, you're feeling a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, it's a real testament. I think our habits are kind of a solution to that problem in a sense. They're our best attempt to feel better in the moment. And really, it's kind of a testament to our health because no one wants to feel bad. I mean, to the point where we will go, you know, people will go spend thousands of dollars a month on heroin, or, you know, they will ruin their lives on different addictions and habits for that moment of feeling better. Just for sometimes a fleeting moment of just feeling like themselves again, feeling kind of closer to home base. So I think that really just, I don't know, it just seems obvious to me that like we're meant to be in a nice feeling, like that is who we are. And yet we experience all kinds of mental stuff, which is just thought, but we don't know how it works. And so we take it very seriously and we get really caught up in it and we suffer a lot from the thoughts and emotions that come through us. Until we understand kind of how they work a little bit more, you know, and once we see, like we were saying, you know, that it's this experience moving through us and it's not about us. It's not, you know, none of our experiences are as personal and as kind of about us as we make them, as they look to us in the moment, you know, it's just life flowing through us. And we have these brains that if your brain tends to have a certain habit, it's going to give you a lot of thoughts that are related to that habit, you know? So I used to think when I would think constantly about food and what I was going to eat next and how many calories were in it and, you know, and just crazy about food, man, what's wrong with me? I really love food. Like I have some serious issues here. And it's not. It's that my brain got a lot of leverage out of going there. And it brought me some sense of relief in some weird way. And so in this kind of energy that gives us experience in life, it gives us thought, hits my brain, it goes down that food path because that's just what's very active, you know? So I think just understanding all that, it's spiritual, but again, it's kind of a little bit of the brain science as well. It just gives us so much freedom from what we're getting because we look less at here's what I do, here's what I think, here's what I feel, and make that less about us. Then it's like, okay, like you said, like, oh, isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And I think that's such a great distinction between like, you know, this is the world and it's happening to me as opposed to like, oh, okay, these are experiences and thoughts moving through me, like my experience is moving through me. Because even just inherent in that, oh, I'm thinking about food so much, what's wrong with me? That what's wrong with me indicates that you feel like something's wrong. So this isn't your true nature, right? It's like I would see myself binge and I would say, well, I must really love binging, but I would feel bad about it. So obviously there's that disconnect there of like, well, if I feel bad about it, then there's something that I don't love about binging, you know? So just thinking of that, like, okay, this is just experience and it's happening. And isn't that interesting? And not getting so attached. Yeah. It's really powerful. I love it.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of related that to see that we're always doing the best we can in any given moment, you know? So there's so many, like, that's a huge question. I'm sure you hear all the time too. Like, well, we try to make logical sense of it. Well, I know better. I don't want to do this. I hate everything about it. Yet I do it twice a day. It just will make your head explode. You know, it's not something, it's not logical. There is no logic to it. It's not going to make sense on a mental level. But kind of seeing, like taking a softer view of it and seeing that all human beings, again, we're feeling what's on our mind in any given moment. We're feeling what we're thinking and how we're seeing the world. That's what we experience. And so, and from that state of mind, we're doing the best we can. And we're always wanting to go back to our home state, to a state of peace. And so if you don't really see a way out and you don't really understand what it all means and, you know, what's going on with you and you feel really, really horrible, it makes perfect sense that you're going to binge or that you're going to do whatever your habit is. Because from that low state of mind, from that low level of consciousness, you just want to feel better. And your brain's telling you, I know how to make you will feel better if you go eat a bunch of food for 4 or 5 minutes. you don't remember that part.
You can be on that. Yes. Yeah.
But it does work. That's why these habits are so sticky, because they actually do make you feel better for a very short period of time until they make you feel worse. But, you know, it's just to have that compassion about it, I think, and that understanding with ourselves to see that we aren't, it's nothing to be ashamed of, and that we aren't doing this, you know, to hurt ourselves or anything like that. We're actually doing it because it's just the best way we can see in that moment to feel better.
Yeah. Our brains are amazing. And yeah. I think that's such a great point about, like, you know, you'll do like your brain will want to do what makes you feel better. But then we also have that confirmation bias of like, you know, if we're coming from a place of, you know, I'm doing the best that I can, this is what my brain wants to do, having that understanding, we'll gather evidence for that. But if you don't have that to think about, like, I feel like we always want to make sense of things. So yeah. If you don't know that and you see yourself binge, you will find a reason. And there's always plenty of reasons, right? You can point it to your stress. You can point it to, you know, whatever, you know, like something's wrong with your brain. Like, well, whether it's true or not, our brains love to find a reason for things. So I think even just having something else to look for, like I'm doing my best, this is what my brain does, can really be powerful for change. So
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome.
And that's, you know, that looking for reasons is how we get on this exhausting kind of wild goose chase of finding like what makes me do this. And then we try to fix things out in our life. Like, oh, it must be stress. I must quit my job. It must be my relationship. Let's get rid of that guy, you know? And then all of a sudden we have a life that's like tiny and it was never those things to begin with.
Yeah. And I remember how, I mean, it was sad, but how empowering it was that I really thought that the stress in my life was driving me to binge, that was the big reason. And I remember once I was recovered from binging, I had some incredible stress that was way worse than anything I'd ever experienced in my binging days. And I had no desire to binge. Like it seemed so ridiculous to binge in that moment. And it's one of those things that it was just kind of a confirmation. Those things don't have to be attached, even though that's the reason that I found once upon a time. Yeah. So, Amy, I'm interested. I'm just curious for you, like kind of your before and after experience. So like, will you describe for us, like when you were in this habit of binging, what your experience was like when a binging urge would arise and then you would binge, compared to now that you've kind of had that insight and shift in perspective, how are things different for you now when maybe those thoughts come up or like the idea to, or like your relationship with food, like kind of contrast them for us?
They're pretty different. So I love this question because it just makes me like just see how far I've come. And not that I even take credit for that, but just feel so blessed that I've had this insight, you know, just to see, oh my gosh, what it used to be like. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it would, an urge would come up. I don't even, you know, I think so often I was just very hijacked by it. I didn't really, I guess at times I saw that I could distract myself or something else. Someone might come in the room and I could kind of push it away. But for the most part, I think I really believed that when this feeling comes up, my only option is to binge to make it go away, either that or just be in huge suffering. And so it was just, you know, very quick. Like I didn't sit with the feeling for very long. I was just off to the races. And yeah, I mean, and so, again, even in that, you can see almost that confirmation bias. If every time you have an urge, you end up binging, well, when you start having urges, it's like you've already decided this is going to happen. So I think those urges sometimes start to escalate much faster. Or it's like you, I can remember almost telling myself, like coming up with my plan, like, okay, I'm going to binge in a minute. I'll go get this food or whatever. And it was almost like I shut my mind down to any kind of wisdom or common sense, because I can remember many times, I love thinking about this, like driving to the store to get binge food and having a little thought come in. That's like, you can turn around. You don't have to do this. You haven't done it yet. And I would just push it away because it was like, nope, I'm living from my head. No, I know how this goes. I know it's not going to go away. I made my decision. And I just think that's so, so sweet. My wisdom was trying to help me and I just pushed it away, poor thing, you know, and just completely blocked it out. And it's such a good example of kind of how we can live in our head. And there's such a feel to it when we're living from a decision, a mental opinion, basically a thought in the moment that we've grabbed to versus something that's a little quieter and gentler. That's always there trying to help us. So anyway, I would push my wisdom aside and the urges were huge. And when I wasn't binging, I was restricting so that I didn't gain a lot of weight and I was over-exercising and, you know, several hours of cardio a day and then riding my bike like 6 miles to work and just insane. And my moods were all over the place and my husband still loved me somehow, but man, I put that guy through. I don't even want to think about it, you know, just with my moods, just because I would feel bad about myself. And it was really hard to be nice and open with someone when you kind of feel like you hate yourself. And then I'd lose some weight and have a week with no binging and feel great. And then it'd be, you know, so it's just so much up and down. And it's just a lot of thought about food. And now, you know, I think it's fascinating. So it's been, I don't know, maybe however long it's been, 5 years since my last binge. And still in certain situations, I will have a thought like, I don't know, just, it doesn't feel like an urge. It feels like a thought like, oh, you could eat that. You could finish that. You know, you could go buy this, like every once in a while, not that often, but it'll still pop up. And it just feels different. It doesn't have that hijacking quality, but again, I think I just see something about it that doesn't escalate it. You know, it's just kind of there, and it's relatively easy to dismiss. I know it's not a real option, but it's just kind of interesting that it's still there. And the one thing I thought would never change really is that I just don't think about food that much. I mean, I do, like to eat healthy, and I, you know, I think about it in a positive way, but there's just no counting, no weighing, no obsession with it. And that's the part I think was that felt really like, man, that'll probably never go away. I'm never going to be one of those people that just stays at a weight and just kind of hangs out there just by eating what they feel like eating, you know, and it not really what feel like eating, but just by eating a kind of normal, moderate way. That's never going to be me, because I was so used to fluctuations, and that is me. So that's good.
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And just for anyone who might be, you know, watching this playback that still is very much, you know, in the habit of binging or whatever the habit is, I just, you know, like you were expressing, Amy, like when you're in that, it's so hard to think of not being that way. Like, oh my goodness, how could I ever be one of those, you know, people? And I can truly say, like, after being recovered from binging, like, I'll even be happily surprised when I think about how I'm not thinking about food. Yeah. I'm like, because when I was in it, like, I was hungry all the time. I felt like if there were no social or physical restrictions on me, my true happiness would just be to eat all day long, because it's like I could never, ever have enough. And to think of being outside of that just seemed so crazy. But then once you're on the other side of it, it's just like, everything's different, but nothing's changed. You know, it's like you're stepping into that insight. And I appreciate you giving us some wonderful wisdom and tools to think about today, and for sharing your story, and for being so open and real. And Amy, your work is so, so meaningful to this world. And I'm really happy that, like, you just feel like you're on my show. Like, that feels really special. I really appreciate you doing that. Any other, you know, thoughts before we jump off that are just kind of like lingering that you would want to say before we kind of wind down?
I mean, I just love what you just said, and just kind of, it really pulls it back to the whole insight piece, you know, that if you're really stuck, if you're in, you know, you and I, Lydia, both experienced just that low point where you're thinking, I do not see a way out of this. That's okay. It doesn't mean there's not a way out. It means you don't see a way out. And that doesn't mean there isn't a way out. It doesn't mean you're not going to have an insight tomorrow. It doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't mean anything. So just kind of know we're doing the best we can. You're doing the best you can right now. You're seeing what you can see, but all you have to do, you know, all that has to happen is you just have to kind of come to see things in a different way. It's not about hard work, willpower, effort, all of that. It's just opening yourself to an insight. And by listening to this, listening to all of Lydia's awesome videos, you know, reading Brain Over Binge and the books we talked about and stuff, you're on the right track, and it can be so much closer than it looks.
Yeah. I love that. Just keep going, because you don't need to force anything, right? As long as you keep going, we just will naturally get better.
There is momentum in your favor. Yeah. I mean, yeah. You are wired to see better and to do better. So just keep looking. Exactly.
Yeah. I love that. Thank you so much. You can find more of Amy Johnson at dramyjohnson.com. So DR, no dot, just dramyjohnson.com. And she has some really cool programs and retreats, and you'll probably in some capacity be seeing more from her, because I don't know how we couldn't just do more stuff. Like, I feel like we're just so aligned and we've had so much fun. So thank you. Thank you. And Lydia Wente, the lifestyle coach. Mwah.
Thanks for tuning in. If you felt a spark here and want to see how these principles can work in your own life, here is your next step. pop over to lydialifestyle.com/session. That's lydialifestyle.com/session, where you can book a free session with our team. We'll give you a call and together find clarity on three things. 1, the exact cycle you keep getting sucked into. 2, what isn't working with your approach. And 3, what's missing to close the gap between food prison and food freedom. We have helped free hundreds of women all over the world from their food struggles. These are proven principles that work, no matter how long you've been stuck. This is Lydia, the Lifestyle Coach, signing off. Mwah!